Hello, this is the Africa Climate Conversations podcast. I'm your host, Sophie Mbogwa. I sincerely apologize for not making this African Dryland episode available yesterday. Do not forget, this episode is part of the six-part series on the Global Landscape Forum, Africa Digital Conference that took place last week, led by the Center for the International Forestry Research and the World Agroforestry Center, in collaboration with its co-founders, UNEP and the World Bank and its charter members. Now, today, Salina Abraham joins me as we look into what was achieved last week during the conference. In this conversation, we'll actually talk about critical issues like finance. How do Africa finance dryland restoration this decade, now identified as the UN Decade of Restoration? We'll also talk about how best Africa can take advantage of its massive population of robust and tech-savvy youth, and many, many, many more issues. So I do not want to preempt the conversation. Allow me to invite Salina Abraham. Salina, thank you so much for joining us. Let's please start with the introduction.
My name is Salina Abraham. I am a young Eritrean professional who started studying in forestry and economics and really got sucked into thinking about how Africa as a continent, East Africa in particular, can achieve its development objectives without really destroying the planet and leveraging, our natural resources. So I've been working as a strategic advisor with the Global Landscapes Forum and different organizations in the past couple of years, particularly on sustainable land management practices.
The GLF just concluded, and I think first, before we talk about the key outcome, probably just good to just bring, our listeners up to date in terms of why was it key to hold this conference at this particular time?
Yeah, that's a great question, because it's felt like, there's momentum building around climate change. There's more awareness, around sustainability. But what we really wanted to do was to ground this in, one of the most important landscapes. And we've talked about this, that, over one third of the world's population lives in drylands. This is an ecosystem that has been completely overlooked, that has a narrative of being scarce and dry and unproductive. And what we wanted to do was to bring together, not only the communities that are living in these landscapes and to raise their voices, but to bring together, the broader climate community, funders, investors, ministers, to start to understand what the actual story of drylands is and to build this new narrative of hope and the vision for the future. So it was incredible, really, to see so many people come to the conference and to align in perspectives, in the thinking of what needs to be done in the future. And so, it was in many ways raising awareness of how important drylands are, but also the role that they're going to play moving into the future, both for climate, but also mostly for people.
What is their role in terms of at this particular time when it comes to, of course, we have the UN Decade for restoration. We also have the whole issues of climate issues. We have different we have to achieve the sustainable development goals. What role do dryland play in terms of achieving all these global agendas?
Exactly. So, the beauty of the conference was being able to host it right alongside World Environment Day and the launch of the UN Decade on Ecosystem Restoration. Mm-hmm. And in one key, aspect of the UN Decade is to encourage really the world and to spark a movement to restore ecosystems, but also largely to prevent the degradation of existing, ecosystems and to dig deeper into what is causing this problem. What are the entrenched habits? What are the drivers of deforestation and degradation? So what we wanted to do in this conference was, one, to really dig into the drivers, and then also to look at what are the policy priorities, what are the development pathways, what are the influences that are currently happening that are either neglecting drylands or driving the degradation within these ecosystems. So it's very important, as we talk about restoration, that we do this holistically and that we integrate this properly into national development plans, into regional initiatives. And so the intent here was to talk about drylands and the role that they play, the multiple benefits that they offer, beyond simply, you know, restoring carbon in the soils, but the benefits that really come to the local communities, the benefit, the ways that we can use this to really invigorate jobs and opportunities for young people to achieve our goals for gender equality. And then, of course, to balance this with, you know, the very real needs of infrastructure or, you know, resource extraction. So trying to think about all of these and then the trade-offs and the synergies and seeing that there is a way forward where our drylands can be, you know, incredible places to maintain our culture, our communities, and also at the same time, the vibrant element of these landscapes and the health and the vitality of these landscapes. So really identifying a sustainable pathway forward, which begins with conversation. So that's really what the GLF intended to do.
And this is very important, especially I was actually just doing a story the other day looking into nature, basically nature-based solutions. And I'm thinking when it comes to drylands and looking into incorporating, going beyond tree planting and looking into the entire ecosystems and also working closely to its people, because then these people are very key to restoring the natural ecosystems that they live in, right?
Exactly. And it's difficult because sometimes we talk about ecosystems and we talk about biodiversity. And so in that context, it's incredibly important. You know, a third of all biodiversity hotspots are within the drylands. But at the same time, there's an incredible amount of people who depend on the land so critically, on rain-fed agriculture, on livestock husbandry. And so this is what we wanted to talk about, is not only, you know, the real benefit from a climate, a biodiversity angle, but also what are the challenges being faced by the local communities? How is COVID-19 and you know, the economic shocks and challenges going to affect them? And think about, you know, also food systems. So there's a lot of different conversations happening, which, you know, is the nature of future thinking and future planning. But it was really important for us to ground that in the local communities, the people, the voices, the young women, young people, the women, farmers, pastoralists. And so the joy of creating this conference was really putting those voices at the heart of it and putting them at the limelight, and then being able to offer a space for others to listen and to observe and to also engage in dialogue.
Yeah.
So we had over 7,000 people in the platform, thousands watching online, millions, of course, on social media, but it felt so meaningful, and it felt like many people really learned something new coming out of it, which is so important in these types of events.
Yeah. And now we have to go deeper into now the implementation, because I find it easier just basically meeting together and having a conversation and looking into understanding what the problem is. But I find it a little difficult when it comes to real actions on the ground and real implementations on the ground. Because what I found in the years of journalism is that we find, like in many adaptation projects, big institutions come, and because there is funding mainly from the global north, then communities are told this is what you do, but then they are largely ignored. In terms of, in many instances, you find that adaptation projects do not really go deep into asking communities, what do you understand, what do you want, what is your problem? And I'm hoping that when it comes to implementation of this fragile lands, restoration of this dry land, it is very key for a change of doing things whereby communities are at the forefront, and big institutions, or probably projects that are implemented even already, because I know it is not a beginning of restoration of drylands, but they've been restored over the years. But I think it's about time that we look into the global south of doing things in a different way, where communities are at the forefront of these adaptation issues, of these dryland restorations, whereby they actually, their voices are heard, so that we have sustainable way programs or projects that are restoring these drylands of the ground.
Yes, I completely agree. And this was a theme that, you know, continued to come up, especially in the closing plenary. And it was really wonderful for us to see the Honorable Minister Sharon Ikezor from Nigeria, the Minister of State for Environment, in discussion with, you know, a young climate activist, Adenike Oladosu, talking about how they're working together to look at how this can actually be integrated. And so a key message from all of this is that it really must be country-driven and integrated into national planning and national implementation. At the end of the day, many of these restoration targets are set by the governments, and the onus and responsibility comes to the government to truly implement and restore this in, number of hectares. But beyond having local communities and civil society, as activists on the side, as people who are trying to demand for accountability, there's a real role in implementation. And to achieve that level of partnership requires a substantial amount of dialogue and trust building. And this is what we were really hoping to achieve, is to build the more substantial exchange of knowledge, of content and aspirations for the future that could enable that partnership to happen with respect to implementation. So I'm hoping that, as we move forward, as we follow up with those who have attended and really encourage future actions, that we could start to tangibly come back and say next year, this is what has come out of it. And it's been a joy to see that happen at every GLF forum, to see new initiatives being launched and formed as we go.
What would you say were the key achievements during the conference?
Well, I will say that, each of our conferences mark the start of a journey. And so, if anything, this was really our first Africa-focused Drylands event. And so what I know will happen and we'll start to see in the months that follow are these new discussions emerging, partnerships and funds bubbling up. And so just as the UN Decade on Ecosystem Restoration was, thought up of and created at a GLF event, I can only imagine the new initiatives that will form afterwards. But we were really happy to see already several initiatives being launched from the Global Environment Facility, from the government of Luxembourg, really supporting additional finance for these ecosystems and country programs. And then very clear calls to action as it relates to tenure, on really women leading intergenerational dialogues, thinking about gender-sensitive land tenure policies, and equitable access to land. Again, this is something that has come up over and over again at conferences, but this is, I think, the way in which we were able to coalesce and find new partnerships around this theme, I'm hoping we'll be able to see translate really at the country level and in different contexts. So there's many different aspects, I think, that we're going to need to follow up on. But it felt that there was a real coherence and alignment among those who attended.
And one of the things that has always been an issue in terms of, especially when it comes to climate issues and adaptation and mitigation, is availability of funding. I'm wondering what funding is available or was agreed upon for the restoration of drylands. And is there a specific number that would say this is how much is required for restoring African drylands?
Yes, I mean, this is a big question, a key question. We had, people launch funds, but nowhere near the finance that is necessary. And so I think one thing that is exciting was the launch from the government of Luxembourg, which announced its new Finance for Nature platform, which, again, is really designed to shift financial flows to sustainable land use models, to do the research necessary, identify the numbers and identify, the key players that can help drive the implementation. So it feels that, the intent is to launch things that are long lasting and that can facilitate and the kind of adaptive actions that need to be taken over the next 10 years. We did see another launch from the Global Environment Facility, the Dryland Sustainable Landscape Impact Program. And this will work directly within 11 countries, right, to reach almost 1 million people directly and restore 12 million hectares. But when we say, this is wonderful, it's been launched, it's 12 million hectares out of, 100. So there's much work left to be done, particularly in the finance category. And the GLF will have a focused finance event towards the end of this year to dig deeper on this topic, because it's one that requires a different audience and a different approach in order to really secure commitments at that scale.
Yeah. How much do we need for dryland restoration in Africa?
Yeah, I can't say how much we would actually need. What I do feel comfortable saying, and what I find is quite unfortunate sometimes, is the amount, there's two aspects here. one is making sure that finance flows support restoration, but then there's also ensuring that finance flows do not compromise restoration, right? That financing degradation we talked about. And this, the amounts that we actually need for restoration is much smaller than what we're actually spending on degradation. And so it's, even if we talk about restoration, it's a small chunk of the pie. When we talk about moving to climate friendly infrastructure, and it's doable. It is very, very doable, and it's small in terms of the scale of financing that we see across the world. But it will require a mind shift. So I would say stay tuned on that for us to really come back and provide some more direct information on the numbers and also the strategies to get there.
Okay, fantastic. And when it comes to the African youth, the continent has a huge number of a young population. This young population are people who are vibrant with technology. When I was actually attending the GLF, there was a lot of platforms that were specifically geared for that. What role do you think the African youth should play?
Yeah, I mean, that was undoubtedly a huge part of the conversation at the conference, and more so just an inevitable, undeniable reality for the African continent, and a big source of hope, in my opinion. So we, you know, we started really systematically working with young people from across the continent on restoration, really capacity development, on business training, nearly 3 years ago now. And it is incredible to see how this new generation of entrepreneurs have evolved already. And we're seeing how young people have the initiative, the will, the really the intent to see their a difference in their communities. And many of them have founded NGOs, are doing work, are, you know, volunteering at different clubs. But what we've been trying to see is how can we shift these community-based NGOs into sustainable social businesses? And really start to see young people move and build for themselves. Now, this is, I want to qualify this because it's really important that people, we don't just look at youth unemployment and say, oh, well, okay, well, young people, why don't you create jobs for yourself? Mm. But I think when we look at the capacity and the desire for young people to really get involved, there's a new opportunity here where private sectors are committing additional funding, and they're looking for the on the ground implementation. And so what we're trying to do now is to really work with our partners, whether that's WRI, Interimatch, or directly with the Robert Bosch Foundation, for example, to really provide the training necessary and the conditions necessary for young people to be able to really flourish and build those NGOs and those sustainable businesses. So we did launch a new fund, really providing seed funding to young people to start GLFX chapters, which we're hoping will really catalyze additional kind of activities as it relates to restoration and young people moving forward. So I'm looking forward to seeing how this 1 year long program goes and how we can report back in a year showing these results. But young people are absolutely pivotal to how we're going to drive this.
There's a couple of trainings that you have actually launched also for the young people, right?
Yes. Yeah. In this conference, we had a 4 week long restoration road trip with over 60 participants, young professionals and different partners. And this is truly tailored to their learning needs, whether that's someone who's studied restoration or someone who's studied business and wants to get involved. So these are ongoing and in communities of support that carry on for years.
All right. But there's one thing I kind of like, I'm wondering whether we also institutions also need to do something different also, like looking into, like I totally understand in terms of the training for the youth and also like specific funding for the youth, because in most cases you find when it comes to many institutions, I mean, many initiatives, like when it comes to climate issues, the youths do not have their own funding. And so basically they are kind of embedded in what institutions are doing. And so like whoever has the money basically drives the agenda, right? And so the young people find themselves, they have to to kind of, I don't know whether I could call it cocoon, or maybe they have to kind of line up within institutions or in what different institutions are actually doing, because they don't have funds of their own. So they, much of the decisions they're making, they're not at the forefront, because they are invited into these meetings because they have to be invited. They can't bring themselves there. Yeah. So there's how do we do things differently in terms of making sure these youths are empowered and they just not have a voice that they can, they have a voice that probably you find they can't implement much of the things because somebody else who has the money has to make their decisions too. And of course, whoever has the money decides the directions by which somebody goes. So a young people might have this particular idea, but then again, because the funder requires that, them giving them the money to align to their own funding, the funding institutions' themes, you still find the youth are kind of curtailed in a way by which, by the level by which they can actually climb. But these are young people who do not have the funding measures by which to actually get to where they would want the continent, basically, or their agendas to go. How do we make sure that we are, in as we now kick off these restorations, actually as now moving forward after the GLF, how do we make sure that the young people have a voice, but then they also have means of implementation?
Exactly. This is one thing that we have been really working on, because as we're, you know, we are in the position now as the GLF when we're working towards more regional support to directly supporting young people, both in finance and networks and in training. So we've, you know, launched our Restoration Stewards Program, which has directly supported young people in their restoration projects. But at the same time, this is a problem that young people are facing at a massive scale, you know, and there's many young people, young or youth organizations are nesting themselves, of course, in those other larger organizations. And it does lead to a concession of a difference in the voice that they have. So there's a more systematic problem at play in terms of being able to really channel funding directly to young people. Our institutions are not built in this way. Many of them are not flexible enough to really account for what young people need. And so I think the real opportunity that we have, and we're doing a deep dive into this now within the GLF, because our real intent moving forward is to provide direct funding and support to local communities, not to middlemen, not to other, you know, people who are holding the purse, but directly to young people who are trying to implement their projects. But because we have this problem, and it is a collective problem, there is a way for us to really collectively find that answer for young people. And so it's, I think there's a real opportunity for these coalitions to build amongst different young people, nascent, you know, growing youth organizations, to identify a new form of accountability and also of just being able to channel this new funding. So I'm really hoping that we can get to that solution very soon, but it definitely requires a new way of thinking and working for anyone who is involved in restoration. This is not something that is simple.
Absolutely. And I just want us to wrap it up. But before we do, I'm wondering, in terms of course, the UN decade of restoration was launched, and the decade that is 2021 to 2030. Why is it important for the drylands?
Yeah, so the UN decade on restoration has big ambitions, both in leveraging finance, but more importantly, in being able to influence the broader conditions to enable successful restoration. So there's many angles to this. On one hand, you know, there's a real effort to facilitate synergies among the Rio Conventions on biodiversity, climate change, desertification, to make it easier for countries to be able to implement the sustainable development goals while keeping restoration at the heart of it, while using restoration as a way to achieve it. So its intent is to make it easier for countries to be able to restore and achieve maximum benefit. This also includes supporting regional processes, initiatives such as the Great Green Wall, both in monitoring and implementation and funding and in other technical aspects. But what I really find is key is this aspect on influencing the broader conditions. And if we're able to achieve this, you know, this is a 10-year long decade. And so it's going to start slow in being able to achieve the funding and being able to mobilize the private sector support. But the ultimate goal is a real transformation in how we you know, treat local communities, indigenous peoples, and how we look at our food systems, it's going to see something that is much deeper, I think, and broader than what we're seeing as the restoration conversation today. And the beauty of it now is that being able to spotlight drylands at this point, to talk about what is needed at the start of the decade, we have a real opportunity to use the UN decade as a way to achieve the goals that Africa has, the vision that Africa has. And so I'm hoping that the UN decade, you know, it's featuring many of our leaders on the advisory board within the task forces, that as the implementation moves forward, that we're really able to achieve the finance that we talked about that is truly necessary, and the country support for implementation that we truly need. So, you know, I would say it's still out on the UN decade. We have much ambition and hope for it, but we'll see how it moves in the next couple of years.
And I'm also just listening to you speaking, I'm wondering, we also have, as a globe, are there too many initiatives? I'm wondering, like, because I'm like, there's the SDG, the ecosystem restorations, there's the AFR, there's the climate change, Paris goal, there's the drylands, there's the UN decade of restoration when it comes to Africa, there's the Agenda 2063. Is there a need to kind of umbrella this and, you know, like, make, you know, how do we run them in tandem? How do we make sure that kind of these efforts basically are all come together? It's one thing, basically, we're trying to work together. Are we having too many restorations whereby countries might find themselves lost in all this? Or do we have a way of marrying them all together and basically saying, okay, we are trying to basically restore our nature and have ourselves our sustainable systems by which we have food, by which we have water, by which we can live, basically, and make sure that our communities are taken care of?
Yes, that is exactly the problem that countries are facing, that ministries are facing. There are so many initiatives, different reporting requirements, different objectives, a new terminology that you know, we all have to keep up with. And so the UN decade sole intent has been to really create synergies in between, to pull data from existing data to be able to show what restoration is needed. And more so, I think, as a whole, this is something that, you know, UN agencies, initiatives, and everyone in this overall community needs to think about. We talk about this at the GLF a lot. Once we've achieved our objectives, you know, it doesn't matter if people know the word landscapes or the landscape approach. Mm-hmm. Our overall long game is the same. You know, we want to see sustainable development. We want to see the end of poverty. We want to see our people thriving. And to do that by year 9, year 8, year 10 of the UN decade, it won't matter if people know what the UN decade is. It solely matters that we're able to move as a collective towards that direction. And so we're really hoping that these first couple years, we're able to create the real needed shifts necessary to give people the language necessary and the actions that they need to take. But the initiative itself, you know, whether the name is there, whether people remember it or not, that's not really the intent.
All right, Selina, thank you so much. Your final word, please.
Oh, I'm so grateful. Thank you for following this. There is, I think, what this conference offered me. You know, there's always with the pandemic, it's been tough to see how this is affecting the most vulnerable, and it doesn't leave a lot of hope for those who are concerned about the climate crisis and how the global community will come together. But this conference served as a real source of hope for me, to be reinvigorated again as, you know, a child of a dryland country, to feel hope that, you know, there's funding that's coming, there's an alignment of messages, and just a true solidarity amongst African people around the direction that we want. So I feel really hopeful and very humbled and grateful to have been a part of it.
Absolutely. And thank you so much for joining this conversation. I sincerely appreciate your time.
Thank you so much. Stay well.
All right.
And for the youth, do not forget to check out our website, www.africaclimateconversations.com, for ecosystem restoration opportunities. Also join us next week as we talk to two youths from Kenya and Ethiopia on their dryland protection efforts. But remember, this podcast is available on Spotify, Google, Apple, our website, and every other channel you access your podcast from. We are also delighted to hear from you through info@africaclimateconversations.com. Remember, the Restoration of the African Dryland series is a six-part series on the Global Landscape Forum, Africa Digital Conference, led by the Center for the International Forestry Research, CIFO, and the World Agroforestry Center, ICRAF. This is in collaboration with its co-founders, UNEP, the World Bank, and its charter members. I do wish you a lovely week ahead. Until next week on Tuesday, Kwaheri. My name is Sophie Mbogwa.